MacCast, Wednesday, August 2nd, 2017. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, a little bit of a different show for you today. There hasn't been a whole lot going on in Apple news, although the biggest thing as I sit down to record this, it was Tuesday yesterday, and Apple announced its third quarter results. So I guess we do have that to talk about, and I'm going to just give you a little rundown of that. But really in this episode, what I want to do is catch up with an old friend. I actually received an audio comment from Tim Chatton, who is a fellow podcaster. He's been podcasting going way back when. Ran into him at Macworld a few times. Actually, that's where one of the first times I met him was Macworld, I think back in, I don't even remember, maybe 2008, 2009, who knows. He goes way back. But regardless, he had sent in an audio comment that I ended up not playing on the show. But in that comment, he mentioned that he was doing something new. He was kind of into a new gig. And what he was up to was podcasting still, but now professionally. And that he was doing all of his podcast work and production on the iPad, 100% on the iPad. And that piqued my curiosity because I'm always interested in people who are taking the iPad to kind of new levels. And so I wanted to get him on. I wanted to talk to him about his setup, what he's doing, and all of that stuff. So I was able to do that. I was able to sit down on Skype with Tim, and we recorded a show, and that's what I'm mostly going to play for you today. But as I said, we do have to talk a little bit about Apple's quarterly results. I'm sure this is going to be in your news feeds for the next couple days, so you can get all the details and the nitty-gritty. But in summary, hey, Apple did pretty good in the third quarter of 2017. They had revenue growth up 7% year over year. Quarterly revenue was $45.4 billion. And a lot of that was due to iPhones and iPads. They did not do too shabby in that department. As a matter of fact, the really good news was that iPad sales were up year over year or quarter over quarter. They actually grew to Apple selling 11.7 million iPads. And I have a feeling the new iPads, the 12.9 inch iPad Pro and the brand new 10.5 inch iPad Pro had a lot to do with that. Also, iPod sales were not too shabby, 41 million units. That was up from 40.4 million units in the year-ago quarter. So they did quite nicely for themselves. And like I said, there's a lot of other details and stuff that we're just not going to dive into because I want to get into this interview with Tim. So if you've ever had an interest in maybe doing audio recording or podcast or pro production work on your iPad, take a listen to this, and I found it very interesting, and so I hope you do. But here's my interview with Tim Chatton from the iPad Pros podcast. So hey, Tim, how you doing?
Good. How's it going, Adam?
Going pretty good. It's been a long time since we've talked.
Yeah, a couple years. We met a couple times out west back when Macworld was a thing, and there was a Petaluma conference. I remember seeing that as well.
MC. Yeah. So and you're up to some new stuff today. You're up to some new stuff now. It sounds like.
Yeah, I got a new day job where I'm producing podcasts for a living, and I'm also started up a brand new podcast of my own called iPad Pros, all about getting work done on the iPad, being productive there. And I wanted to figure out how to actually produce podcasts entirely on my iPad. So I figured it out and thought it'd be fun to talk about here.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I found out you were doing this, so you had sent me an audio comment on something else. And then that's when I found out about your new show. For people who don't know, you've been around in podcasting. You were actually podcasting with an iPhone, I think, the first time I met you, maybe. I think you were running around Mac World, and you were like a crazy man with an iPhone whole rig that you had set up, and you were doing interviews all over the place at Mac World.
Yeah, I did iPad Possibilities podcast. I started that in 2010, right after the iPad was announced.
Right.
And did that for about 2 years, and yeah, did some interviews at Mac World, video interviews with this kind of crazy setup. And so it's been about 5 years since I've had an iPad-focused podcast and decided to, hey, come back, let's start this up now that the iPad is very much a matured platform with iOS 11.
And the reason I wanted to bring that up is because, I mean, you were really doing it when there wasn't much available. Like, you kind of had to put together really your own system. There wasn't iographers. There wasn't, I don't think there was an iographer at that time. Maybe it was, there was something like that. But, you know, I'm talking about the kind of rigs and lenses and accessories.
Oh, yeah.
And
that was at the very beginning of it.
Yeah. Yeah. At the very, very beginning.
Wow. The hardware has come such a long way since then.
Let alone the softwares and tools to maybe edit audio and video and do those sorts of things. So I really want to try and I really want to find out about sort of the process that you went into, one, in just deciding to start up the podcast, and then really get into the nitty gritty about how you're doing the production. Because you mentioned, like you said, you're doing production for your day job for a couple shows. And I had to ask you this like three times. So I did it outside the interview, but I'll ask you here. So you're producing both those podcasts entirely with the iPad?
Yeah, from start to finish. I'm recording interviews as we're doing now. So one's an interview show I do with consultants in the fundraising world. And I have to record in a variety of ways because some are very stubborn and just want to use their landline. So
right.
I kind of cringe with that because the audio is not as good. But yeah, so I produce entirely on iOS, and that is all on the iPad except for the rare phone call I have to make where I'll use my iPhone to grab the audio. But yeah, entirely on the iPad from start to finish, and editing, uploading, the whole nine yards.
All right. So I think the place to start probably is going to be with the gear. So what kind of iPad are you rocking? What's kind of the mic situation set up? How do you do all of the hardware side of things?
Sure. So I've got the second generation 12.9-inch iPad Pro with 512 gigabytes of storage.
Okay.
So that's the iPad. And I had an old iPad Pro, the original, with 32 gigabytes, and that I realized was almost unusable. I could not install apps, and I wanted to go the other direction, just not worry about that. So I could do, for part of the podcast production, I'll actually do a YouTube version that's spit out there as a video file. So I wanted to not worry about huge files and just being able to work with those. So other hardware. So a couple different mics I'm using. The main mic I'm using is the Audio-Technica ATR-2100.
Okay.
It's a mic. USB.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite the, it's cool mic, right? You know about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I have a 2005, which is about the same. It's about the same mic. It's a USB dynamic mic, but they sound great and they work really well.
And this one, it does both USB and XLR output. So what that means is that with the single mic, I can, you know, use it with my Zoom H6. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm just soloing it and just doing some intro, outro stuff by myself, I can plug that in just via the USB adapter for iPad. So it's very versatile. So I can use it either with my external recorder or with just directly into the iPad, which is really nice.
Right. And the 2005 also has the XLR. I forgot. I more often these days use it just to the USB because I am going direct in.
Yeah.
One thing always with a USB mic, though, that's a concern is getting power. And so there's enough power through the Lightning to USB adapter on the iPad Pro to power up that mic without issue?
There is, yeah. Okay. Majority of the time, though, I'm actually using it in the XLR mode. So here's kind of the setup that I'm dealing with here.
Okay.
So I'm running, if it's an interview show, I'll be running Skype on my iPad with, you know, whatever notes I have in split screen. And then I'm doing a output from the iPad using the headphone jack into the Zoom H6. And the Zoom H6 lets you do an input through this top capsule it has.
Okay.
So you can do input there, and it's got a hardware knob to control your gain. So I can be recording anybody through Skype through that, an input mechanism to the Zoom. And I've got the hardware knob, and I can see live levels. So as I'm doing the show, I can kind of monitor what's going on with the levels. And it's on a separate track from my track, which is, you know, kind of essential for recording a podcast.
Sure.
And then my mic is XLR into the Zoom. So I've got the XLR microphone into the Zoom. And then from the iPad, I've got the Skype call, or if it's an, you know, I could do an iPhone to do just regular landline calls that way.
Okay.
So, and then from the Zoom, I can monitor both things. I can, there's a headphone jack on the Zoom, which is what I'm listening to you on. And it also gives me feedback on my own mic to see what that sounds like.
Right. Right. So it sounds somewhat similar to the kind of setup I have typically on my Mac. The one variable, and I think I understand how you're getting around this, is Skype, right? Because Skype on the iPad, we don't have, you know, on the Mac, we have wonderful apps like Audio Hijack or Call Recorder or something like that, that allows us to reroute the audio and just record right, you know, inside the Mac. So the way you're getting around that is you're basically taking the audio out from the iPad through the headphone jack and going into an external digital recorder. Is that right?
Yeah. So, yeah, basically just, yeah, external recorder, because iOS can't do that yet. And what I found is, like, so... what I found is on the Mac, so you have the apps, but I feel so much more confident with a dedicated hardware device, right, that I'm able with, you know, the hardware knobs to adjust gain throughout the recording, which is nice.
Okay. And so, and then to grab your audio, so on the Skype side of things, when you're doing Skype and you're recording it externally, is it capturing both your audio and the guest audio, or?
No, they're separate. So
okay,
with the headphone jack, it's gonna, to the Zoom, the input is just your audio. My audio is nowhere on that input, which is pretty essential, unless
right,
it drive you insane, right? Trying to edit that. So the Zoom has on track one my XLR microphone, and on track XY the input from the iPad, which is just your audio. And something I discovered the day, so I was trying to improve what you're hearing, because what you're hearing is just the iPad microphone.
Right.
So I tried to figure out a way to improve that. There's a bunch of different dongle microphones that exist that you just plug into your iPad Lightning port that just gives you a better external mic.
Right.
And something that Skype does is it won't work if there's no headphone jack on that dongle. So I bought the Shure MV88, which is a really good just Lightning dongle microphone.
Okay.
But since there's no headphone output, it won't even talk to that microphone. I have a BlueSpark Digital that has a headphone output, and we were pointing out that before the show it was working through that mic, but having some cabling issues and it wasn't working out so well.
Right.
But anyways, so the thing is with iOS and Skype, they programmed it kind of bizarrely where if there's no headphone output on that microphone, it won't talk to it. So even with the BlueSpark, I had to have the headphone jack output from the iPad into the Zoom plugged in after we started the call, because
right,
of it basically you plug in the headphone, it'll override the microphone output to that output. It's kind of bizarre how that works. So
yeah,
I found
on the iPad is tricky.
Yeah, so I found a Zoom makes a Zoom, I think it's the i6 or QI6, which has a headphone output, so that's going to be my next step in trying to get a good external mic so the person I'm on Skype with hears some better audio that way.
Right. Okay, so now I'm kind of getting it. So really, Skype is just for capturing Skype to an external digital recorder for capturing your guest, and then you're using the Zoom input to capture yourself, and then I'm assuming somehow you're bringing those two things in and marrying those a little bit later, and I'm sure we're going to get to that. Before we do, though, is there any other kind of hardware? So you mentioned the Audio-Technica mic and the iPad. What other kind of hardware are you using?
The final piece that was pretty essential was getting the SD card capture of the recording to your iPad.
Right.
And that, I thought I was almost giving up for a while because it looked pretty dire. There wasn't much out there because the SD card, camera adapter just works with photos, no files yet.
Right.
And there was this Wi-Fi card that was a USB card, but it was really slow. It was like 802.11g speeds. And then I stumbled upon this, what's called the Mobilite G3.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an amazing piece of kit. So it does a lot of different things. First off, it's a mobile router. It's 802.11ac.
Okay.
It also can serve as an iPhone battery backup and charge your iPhone. And it also, so it's a, it'll extend the router the internet's attached to, so you can still be online when you're using it without Ethernet. The key part of this is it's got SD card input and a USB input, so you could hook up a hard drive to it, or you can pop in an SD card. And they've got a really nice app for it that's split screen. So what I do is I just connect to that device, and I beam over the files directly in the ferrite from there. And the transfer speeds, so at work I've got a 2014 MacBook Pro or so with a built-in SD card reader. And I was running some tests, and because it's a spinning hard drive-based system, this like external box that goes over 802.11ac was actually transferring files to my iPad faster than a local output from that MacBook Pro. It's an older bit of hardware, the MacBook Pro, but still, it's to transfer, say, a 500 megabyte file over 802.11ac direct, it's really fast. It's within a minute, you've got the file over. So it's not a long delay at all. And it's going directly in the ferrite where you need it to do your editing.
So this is a little hardware device that lets you transfer files over basically direct Wi-Fi, right? It
sets exactly.
It's on Wi-Fi network, and then it will also connect to an existing network so you can use it to do pass through as well, right?
And the price point, so I got it for $25, and that's what Best Buy is selling it for now. Amazon kind of fluctuates. I've seen them for $70, but $25 is what I got for, and Best Buy has it there. But yeah, for $25 you get all of this great functionality.
Router, the 3G in there, will it connect to a cellular data network? Like, does it take a 3G card or something like that too? Or no, that's just...
It doesn't. No. Okay. I mean, it could extend a tether, probably.
I've heard of things like that too, where like you can get 3G routers, right? Or 4G routers.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, the MiFi's.
Not one of those, despite the name, I just
no, and yeah, I stumbled upon
this.
It's like
$25. It would be.
Yeah, it's really the app's really well designed. Like, it's split screen. It does all the modern iOS things, and it works really quickly. And it kind of surprised me. It's like, oh my gosh, this bit of functionality that Apple refuses to put into even the Files app for iOS 11 is in this little box.
Okay.
And the price point was unbelievable. They've got a $100 version that's got some onboard storage as well. But that's the bit of kit that makes this all work. Because otherwise you'd need a Mac to just get the SD card files off of the stupid Zoom.
Right. So before we move on to the editing software side of things, I know you already mentioned Ferrite, so I'm assuming that's where we're going to go with that, but I'm going to have some questions about that and about transferring the files. On the recording side of things, I know, and I'm trying to remember the name of the audio utility that Apple built into GarageBand or worked with building into GarageBand. There was an audio thing that would allow you to route audio. Audio bus, is that what it's called?
Yeah, audio bus. And it's frustrating because
the iPad. And my question is, and you're probably guessing what it is already, but my question is like, how come that there's nothing that will allow you to sort of route the audio from, say, like Skype or some other application into like GarageBand to just do all the recording on the iPad without this whole sort of external thing? I get the advantages of the external thing, and I'm with you on that. But I've always wanted to like find a way to like keep it all on the iPad, and that seemed like that was the promise of it, right? But it never
and
really
Apple even supported it with GarageBand, as you said, and none of the VoIP apps support that, and it's mind-boggling that no one did, And but it's currently no, that doesn't exist. And
but a lot of audio apps do. So there's lots of cool things you can do with, like, you know, these apps that do sort of beats and dance mixes and loops and all these sorts of things where you can, like, feed them in, and you can even, like, I think through Audiobus, like, layer multiple ones together, and you can feed it all into your GarageBand, and then you can overlay stuff with GarageBand. You know, it's like,
yeah, it's incredibly advanced. The music production is phenomenal, but for whatever reason, VoIP, the companies just didn't decide that was something they wanted to do.
Yeah, I keep hoping Skype will add Audiobus support, but I have.
And then there's, of course, yeah, WebRTC is coming, and maybe, you know, we'll have the web services, which you could do this all within Safari, hypothetically, in the future.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that'd be another question for you. Yeah, so there are a bunch of, like, websites that'll kind of let you do everything. You know, you produce a whole podcast through your web browser, right?
Yeah, and that's coming. So iOS 11 supporting WebRTC in a little, it's got a little bit different way about it. So the companies will need to program in iOS support, but it'll be technically possible for Caster, or I forget the names. There's a couple that are designed for this, double ending recordings within a web browser, and that's something that could be pretty phenomenal. And you could even do such things like a Google Hangouts within a browser, potentially. That also would be available.
Yeah, I mean, the big advantage there, especially for guys like us who do audio interviews and stuff like that, as you mentioned earlier, if you've got somebody who maybe is not really familiar with Skype and doesn't want to deal with it or doesn't want to use it and prefers, like, the telephone, you can maybe get a service where it's like, okay, don't worry about that. I'm just going to send you a link, go to this website, and we can start an audio conversation and I can record it. And that's maybe a little more comfortable for guests sometimes, I think. It's like, oh, it's
yeah,
just a
it
web
would
browser.
Be. You know, yeah, versus telling them. Yeah, exactly.
I don't.
But
it
would be really nice. iOS 12, some kind of advanced audio routing thing, because the Audiobus isn't taking off of Skype. It needs to be something, I guess, built into something Apple's trying to push on developers to encourage.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's constantly changing, and I think that's, you know, sort of what your podcast is about. And I want to get to that in a little bit too. So let's just finish up the whole podcast production thing. So we've got two more parts. So we've got the hardware, we've got the input, we've got audio coming in, we've got audio files. Okay, so now editing. And I've done my podcast for years on GarageBand. I'm a huge GarageBand fan, but even I recognize, for whatever reason, on the iPad, GarageBand for podcasts just doesn't feel like it cuts it. Did you ever try GarageBand?
Yeah, endless frustration. It's a music app,
right?
And you had to do all these hacks to get a file long enough. And so I as well started with GarageBand on Mac. That was my editing software I used for iPad Possibilities back in the day. And it was the glory days of GarageBand when enhanced AAC was king and
right,
all of that. And then, so I started, when I started my job, I started on the Mac. I got a Mac laptop I'm able to use there. But then I realized this Mac, it's a couple years old. It's got the spinning hard drive, and I'd rather work on the iPad. It's better hardware, and Ferrite, I've been digging into more and more, and it's saving me so much time editing in Ferrite, because I'm doing very tight edits for the work podcast. There's no ums or dead air. It's very tight. So to do all these whatever thousands of edits in a podcast that I'm doing for it, Ferrite's got all these tools that make it a much better tool for me to do the edit and get the job done.
Right. So for people who aren't familiar, Ferrite is this really great multi-track editing, audio editing application for the iPad. And I'm going to try and maybe you can send me some links, but I'm going to try and get links for all the stuff that you're mentioning in the show notes for this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if people want that, we'll try and make sure that it's all there. So were you like me? Did you find out about Ferrite through Jason Snell's been actually writing, and I want to bring his name up, and I don't know if you've been referencing the stuff, but he's been trying to do this as well, this whole audio podcast on the iPad as a portable setup, and he has a lot of great insights and articles. And he was the one that turned me on to Ferrite. I don't know how you found out.
Yeah, the same way. I heard it on one of the podcasts. He was talking about it, and I downloaded it and gave it a whirl. And it's basically, it feels custom built for me. It's wonderful.
Okay.
One of the nice things about it is the audio library. So I reuse music, I reuse some intro bits, and it keeps it all in there. That's in searchable. So as I'm working on projects, I can just search and grab audio from there. Versus on GarageBand on Mac, I'd have to have, you know, the Finder window open and have it through that. But well, in Ferrite, it's all kind of baked in.
That was another huge limitation on with doing a podcast in GarageBand is there's no way to import audio files.
You're doing it every single time.
You cannot bring in, like your intro music or anything like that. So not only does Ferrite let you import that stuff, I'm assuming, but also it sounds like you're saying there's a library so you can keep it kind of stored there as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So you were talking earlier about using the, what's the name of the little 3G device? Or not 3G device.
The Mobile Light Wireless G3.
The Mobile Light Wireless G3 device. In split screen to bring your audio into your audio files and audio recordings into Ferrite.
Yeah.
Is Ferrite actually able to just connect that? Is it like through the web dev thing?
It's the open in command. So you got basically you're able to browse the directory and then just choose open in Ferrite. Now I'm curious with iOS 11 with updates eventually, if I could just drag and drop the files into Ferrite. I think that could be technically possible in the future. That could be something that happens. But right now it's just the open in command, and it works really fast like that.
Because I did one episode. I've produced all of one episode entirely on the iPad. I did it when I was on vacation last year. And the biggest struggle I had was exactly what you were talking about. How do I get this audio file that I've recorded? And I think I recorded the audio just straight in GarageBand using the Audio Technica, the 2005 mic,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
going into the adapter. And so I had this file in GarageBand, and I was like, how am I going to get this file up there? And I think I did this convoluted thing where I realized, okay, I can export out the audio file into iCloud, and then I think I took it from iCloud through Documents by Riedel into Dropbox, and then I think Ferrite will actually can pull a file directly from Dropbox. So it was like this.
I believe so. Yeah, but the open
process, and I had to go through the cloud to even get it to work. And then I also think it supports. There's another great thing for moving just audio files around, and I think it kind of works through the audio bus thing, if I'm remembering right. But there is a program called Audio Copy. I think it's called Audio Copy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it probably supports that. But yeah, the open-in, it works really quickly, and you can send it directly to the app. So, and also, you can just record right within Ferrite.
Right.
You don't get a live, wave file as you're looking at, like you do in GarageBand, but you get feedback if your levels are high enough. And they've got this bookmarking thing where you can tap and bookmark spot, and you can also pause your recording. It's a setting you have to enable. You can pause your recording, take a break, and regroup, and then continue on with your recording.
Right, and now you're jogging my memory, because I did actually record the main audio directly in. I remember what the problem was now. So I had recorded the audio, but I had forgotten to bring along with me or to load onto my iPad the intro outro music for the Maccast.
Oops.
which is this specific song by a band who is no longer together. And it's called like Angels with Dirty Faces by I'm gonna blank on the name of the group, but anyway, I ended up finding they had still a copy of the file up on GarageBand or on Bandcamp.
Yeah, sure.
So I bought it. And then I had a heck of a time downloading it, first of all, like figuring out how to download it into my
these days, iPad. There's, of course, the Workflow app,
right,
which tends to work pretty well. If the file download, and then you could do open in from Workflow.
And so I believe that's what ended up happening. Or I may have downloaded also iCab temporarily, the browser.
Yeah.
which iCab has a feature where you can download files to iCab and then again upload them into Dropbox. It was just
workflow is amazing. It does all. I had to do a. There was a YouTube emergency at work one day where I had to download one of our YouTube videos and do an edit and then re-upload it. And workflow, you're able to download YouTube videos right to your iPad, and it was.
So there's like the encoding workflow for like download, you just like pass it a URL or something like that, or
yeah, it's a pretty advanced workflow. I didn't make it, but it worked really well. And the encoding's faster on my iPad Pro 2 than my MacBook Pro currently, which is mind-boggling.
So I think we're getting ahead ourselves. We're anyways, some of your podcast stuff. But so Ferrite, yep. So Ferrite is how you're Ferrite, doing yep. all of the recording and assembly and.
Yeah, and the keyboard shortcuts really were game changer when they added, most recently, you can customize your keyboard shortcuts now to whatever you want. And I'm basically able to have, I basically thought of it as like a computer video game. I'm not sure if you remember or if you play, but you'll have, you know, S, F, E, and D to move your character around, right. You know. So I thought of it like that. Let's have one hand stationary where I don't need to move it to get to the things I need to do, then my right hand's free to do any on-screen adjustments I need to. So I'm able to, with just keyboard shortcuts, select. So I'm able to, you know, do a split. I'm able to select all the following tracks after that split and move the playhead back to the prior clip. So getting, you know, where all that empty space is, I can just move back to the prior clip, and then with the another button, I can move all that selection back to the playhead. So I can very easily and quickly do cuts. I can select everything and move it back to fill in the empty space within Ferrite.
Oh,
and
cool.
Yeah, it's a very quick process. And then Ferrite also, I'm not sure if GarageBand has this, but it's got the remove silence and it's got the tightening up where it'll just get rid of parts of the audio tracks that don't have any speaking.
Right. And that works pretty well. I always worry about using those things where it's like going to clip it too tight or grab something that it shouldn't
yeah,
grab.
So each time I kind of look through and try to find the soft spots, and you're able to adjust it on a per track basis and change it every time. So I'll make sure what's cutting is not cutting real audio.
Right.
And also, since it's not destructive, if it does overstep its bounds, I can just, you know, grab the handles and
pull it
fix
back
it.
In.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty cool. Very, very cool.
And then, of course, you can also do MP3 chapter exports now within Ferrite, which I'm on iOS 11, and that's the one feature of Ferrite that just doesn't work in iOS 11 right now.
So. Well, I'm assuming it won't do AAC, though.
No. Sorry. I know. You got your show's been great doing AAC since day one, and MP3 is, I guess.
Yeah, I have a feeling AAC's days are numbered, but
yeah, it's kind of interesting. I stumbled upon an AAC thing within Safari, and that actually supports the video picture-in-picture mode on iOS.
Yeah, cool. Anything else with Ferrite? I think the last thing that I want to get is exporting with Ferrite, but
yeah, definitely. So one of the things on the Mac I always had to do was use Levelator to get my levels how I want to sound good, right? So Ferrite added at some point in the past year Levelator built into their freaking app. So that's another just step that's gone from what I need to do workflow wise. So I can it'll work with doing the whole project all at once, or what I do is I'll do that, but I'll also do it before I start working with the voice files. I'll do a preliminary levelation, I guess.
Okay, so you can do that, because that's how my workflow works, is I always take the recorded stuff, or if someone sends me an audio clip or something like that, I will levelate the clip itself before I bring it in and even start working with it. So I sort of pre-levelate everything so everything's on an even keel.
Yeah, I do that as well.
I really don't do any post-levelating or normalizing or anything like that, because I'm, I try to make sure that everything coming in is where I want it to be versus trying to.
Yeah, and then as you're editing, you can hear the sound, so it's exactly as you hear it when you edit too, which is nice.
Right.
But yeah, I do a preliminary level within ferrite, and it works really well. It's been, and there's different options depending on how severe you need it, and I just normally do the middle of the road recommended setting.
So how are you handling finally exporting and then RSS creation and all that?
Sure.
Fun stuff?
So within ferrite, you're able to set all the ID3 tags, the metadata. So you're able to set all of that, including, you know, artwork and show notes or, and all the different tags you'd expect.
And it handles does it handle the tags for iTunes as well? No. This is just the metadata tags for the MP3.
For the MP3. Yeah, that'd be part of the actual RSS feed, I believe. Yeah. So, yeah, it does all that. And then I export as a mono MP3 file, 128 kilobits is my setting.
Yep.
They don't have 96. I kind of wish they had 96. That'd be my preferred, but for now I'm doing 128. And from there, so I can do a couple of different things. Exporting it, and then I can send it off to a couple different places. I can send it to, Files app or Google Drive, or there's FTP apps you can use.
Yeah,
but what I'm doing
on the iPad is awesome.
It is, yeah, it's phenomenal. And there's also Twisted Wave if you want is another audio editing app. And before ferrite added some of the features, I would use that as an FTP uploader and doing the metadata there. But now I do it all within ferrite. And a couple different things. So for iPad Pros, I use Pippa to host my files. It's a new Libsyn competitor.
Okay.
And they support the iOS 11 drag and drop with the Files app. So what I do is I'm exporting my MP3s to the Files app. I've got them all stored with an iCloud, and then I can just drag and drop that file right into Safari, and it does the upload, and that's where I set all the iTunes data and do the, you know, RSS data it needs there.
Okay, so your service is handling your RSS feed and the RSS data and the iTunes metadata and submitting the feed to iTunes and all that fun stuff.
Right, and I'm using FeedBurner as the submitted feed to iTunes.
Okay.
So for the other podcast I do for work, I'm using Libsyn, and I'm doing the FTP upload to get files up there.
Right, that's what I use.
But yeah, yeah,
and then,
it's pretty.
And then again, you're using Libsyn for doing all of your RSS metadata that you need to do.
Exactly, and okay. Then I also have an editorial script I do like a blog post about each episode.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have an editorial script, and what I love about the templates you can make in an editorial is it kind of walks you through every step. You can even put little reminder pop-ups to, hey, grab a featured image to put in your camera roll before you get started with this part of it. So it walks me through, hey, grab this URL, and I can drag and drop URLs into the editorial template, and then spits it out and does direct upload to WordPress. For a lot of the iPad Pros episodes, I'll do a complimentary video extra where I, you know, do a screencast about what I was talking about that episode. Mm-hmm. So it'll, you know, walk me through grabbing the YouTube embed code and things like that. So editorial has been another nice part of this that makes it work so well.
Is that a blog, like a blog editor or a straight text editor? Or not?
I've heard of editorial, but I never used it. So it's a Markdown editor.
Okay, it is a Markdown editor.
Yeah, but what makes it special is all of the automation it does. So you can do things like when you're at a certain step, it will automatically launch you into a certain URL. So I could have a URL programmed in to go to Pippa to do my upload. It could then automatically take me to the YouTube upload, the upload YouTube, and, you know, it walks you through the process of, you know, just finalization.
Okay, so it's one of these more pro level workflow kind of applications that's very much automation for you and things like that.
Yeah, and actually the final step, so it goes from editorial to workflow, and workflow does the actual WordPress posting of the content that I got doctored up within editorial.
Oh, very cool. That sounds very, very slick and very automated. In a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's helpful because I sometimes would forget things that I'm supposed to do for, you know, finalizing each episode post. And designing your own editorial template allows you to do it once and not have to remember what to do the next time.
I may have to check that out. I just discovered Bear, and I've been a Byword user for a long, long time, and I switched over to Bear. But, I mean, those are really just Markdown editors. It sounds like editorial is more for kind of more complex workflows or more things where you have a process that you need to
So
repetitively every time that you're working on something.
Yeah, so if you have standard URL schemes where the only thing that changes is your episode number, you can have everything in place, and then editorial can ask you to input your episode number that week, and everything else is in place. It's almost like Text Expander on steroids in that way, where you have all these standard things you're using, and then it just asks you to put in the right puzzle pieces.
Cool. That's very cool. So I think that's kind of a good transition to talk about what you're doing with the podcast and what you think about the direction Apple's taking the iPad in and stuff like that. Obviously, you're very into using an iPad as a content creation, as a professional machine. And it sounds like that's kind of what the podcast is all about.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, my day job, I'm 90% doing everything on my iPad. And then there's this 10% of things that I still need to access the Mac to actually do. Mm-hmm. And it's mainly using HubSpot, which is a marketing tool, but right. Their website on the iPad is very sad. So,
not really optimized, huh?
Not really optimized. I did solve one part of it by I felt very proud at the end of this. So I'm not a developer by any means, but I looked at their API for social media publishing, mm-hmm. and figured out a way to use workflow to make a better user interface to do all the social media publishing and scheduling for our company. So I can, you know, pick a time in the future. I can you know, do image upload right within workflow for the social media post. I can choose which social media accounts it goes to, and all this was available through this API that I it took me a bit to figure out, but once I did, it's been great just to be able to use that.
That's very cool. And so you wrote up a workflow for that. We probably should mention to people, because we've said workflow a few times, for people who don't know what it is, when we're saying workflow in the context of I did this with it, workflow is a great automation app for the iPad and iOS. The best equivalent I can think of on the Mac is Automator. You know, it's like Automator for the iPad in a way, and that's probably oversimplifying it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it is. Yeah,
it gives people the idea. I mean, it works in a very similar way where you have components that integrate with various apps, and you can sort of pull those together and chain them together to make kind of this recipe of the thing that you want to automate. And you can grab stuff from the clipboard or from the camera roll or, you know.
Yeah, and learning about variables and setting variables was pretty big for me, because I could – so for LinkedIn and Twitter, one I'd use hashtags with, one I wouldn't. So I could literally have a variable set for the Twitter version of this post, and then have a different variable where I'd remove all the hashtags and it's a different variable that goes into a different thing. And,
right.
Yeah, so it gets pretty – some of my workflows get pretty advanced.
It can start out simple, but you can get pretty complex. And I think that's the whole point. You know, if anybody who's ever used Automator, though, too, I think has gone through that same thing. Like using variables in Automator or logic, you know, things and stuff like that gets really kind of dicey and tricky pretty quick.
Yeah. One of the things that I love with the workflow that's faster there versus my Mac when I was doing it there is the photos for our blog posts. So we have a standard size we crop and resize photos to. And on the Mac, it was a process of me doing a manual crop and, you know, doing the right things there. I'm sure there's probably a way to automate this on there too, but
sure.
I could, with workflow, get the latest photo. I could do a resize, and I could crop from there, and I could do the file naming and upload directly into WordPress all from there. It's been phenomenal for just dealing with photos.
Yeah, on the Mac, I think everything up to and maybe even including the upload to WordPress. But yeah, Automator would be your tool on the Mac.
Right. Yeah.
I know a lot of people who build, you know, auto cropping workflows in either AppleScript or Automator. But it's very similar process. What's just cool is that we even have those tools on iOS with all of their limitations, which is interesting. So, I'm guessing your take on. How do you feel about the whole debate people have about, you can't use an iPad for everything the way that Apple is sort of alluding, you know, that an iPad cannot be a replacement for a desktop or a notebook?
So it depends what you're doing.
Right.
And I think right now that's probably the case for some people. But I think all of this is solved in time with software. I think software, as it's being created, it's going to allow more and more people to move to the iPad if they want to. Right. For example, I would have thought just a little while ago I would need to have my Mac for Final Cut Pro 10. But then I discovered LumaFusion, which released not too long ago, right. And they've built this amazing. I'm not sure if you've seen that app yet, Adam.
Yeah, no. I'm glad you brought this one up because we'd been talking a lot about audio editing with Ferrite. The other question I get a lot of from a lot of people, especially with iPad Pro out there now, is what is the equivalent of, you know, iMovie or Final Cut on the iPad? And until recently, we didn't have anything, but you know, you just mentioned it. So go ahead, LumaFusion.
Yeah, LumaFusion. Yeah, yeah. So I have an interview in episode 3 of my podcast with them, and they're doing some really cool things as far as doing video editing. It's basically Final Cut Pro for iPads, what I've realized. It does all the advanced things that I would need. There's a couple things that are missing, but it's got a good 90-95% of what I'd use it for. It's got this amazing edit view where you can open this edit view up. You can resize different videos to be in different parts of the frame, different photos and text, and just do really advanced, I guess, framing of what's in your frame. And it supports, I think, 3 or 4 4K video streams all at once. It's they're going to be doing with iOS 11. So this is what I sent you in as the audio feedback, but
right.
With ARKit, you're able to set sense depth. And they're going to use that for chroma key. So with the green screen, you'll potentially have better green screening on your iOS device because of ARKit than you could on Mac.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest challenges for anybody who's ever done green screen, and I would imagine the depth stuff will handle this in some ways, is if you get any kind of shadow or anything that messes up the chroma, you know, the key basically. So you talk to anybody who does green screen and they will tell you even lighting is the biggest thing that you can do, right? Is you got to make sure that green is a flat green surface and that's what's being seen. It's keyed out and, you know, try to avoid getting any shadows on it because it, you know, it'll mess it up or any ripples in the fabric or anything like that. So I would think throwing in the ARKit depth perception stuff, you could probably compensate for that. And I would assume even sort of have sliders or thresholds to say, okay, you know, if there's a little bit of warping or something in my chroma key, don't, you know, handle that.
Yeah, exactly. And there's things in LumaFusion as well, as far as advanced features. There's also retiming of video, so you can slow down or speed up the video, put in reverse, detach audio to move that around. There's ability to put in just a empty video placeholder thing, which allows you to line up, do like preliminary placements of things. So mm-hmm. if you don't have the video shot of that, but you might have audio that you want there, or you could put like a cue card there, you can do all of that within LumaFusion, and it'll export. You know, so with Final Cut Pro, you have to choose your resolution before you get started. With LumaFusion, it'll export after the fact whatever you want it to be. It'll smartly use the data it has and work with that to export.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing how quickly the software side of things in terms of content creation is going on the iPad. I think finally related to the to this, and then maybe we'll wrap up here, is what do you think the biggest challenge for you know, workflows and doing this kind of stuff on the iPad is? I know we've kind of mentioned a few things here and there, but I mean, what do you really see the thing that, you know, could really change things for people making an iPad really their primary device? And again, this is a not, if not for everybody, but, you know, we know that there's people who use email and doing text and stuff like that. That's fine. But for pros, for professionals, what is the biggest challenge you think that they have right now, and the thing that Apple could address to kind of to help them?
Yeah, let's see. Because one
I
thing
can tell I tell you my theory.
Yeah,
if you're stuck or something.
I personally, so I love the split screen and dragging apps into the split screen view.
Right.
But I kind of wish the tall vertical one at the when you have 2/3 of a screen for one app and your, you know, secondary app. Yeah. Well, even when it's in split screen mode, just, you know, if it's in the 1/3 mode,
right.
I really wish there was a way to have that app split up in two. So you could have these kind of like small widget apps that
okay,
you have Twitter up in one corner and below that a different app for reference. That would be, I think, huge.
A horizontal division.
Yeah. And then ergonomics is something that a lot of people may struggle with at first. It's something that people have to get used to. Like, the iPad's a touch device, so sometimes you're going to be grabbing your iPad, and I like to pace in my office sometimes and work on stuff when I'm just holding the device in my hands.
Right.
And it's really nice having Bluetooth keyboard to do, you know, have being able to do that. But it's software, right? So if the website isn't friendly enough, you're not gonna be able to do it. What I've been doing is I've been using Jump Desk Desktop is like a VNC app for iPads. I've been using that, and they actually support the Citrix X1 mouse. So if there is a Mac thing, so say I want to stay in the hardware because I don't want to just be jumping hardware every time I need to do something on the Mac.
Right.
You can use a Bluetooth mouse with Jump Desk, and it supports with the smart keyboard or Bluetooth keyboard, so you can have a full Mac experience with mouse input as well.
iPad?
On the iPad, yeah. There's two mice that are iOS supported, very limited. So there's the Citrix X1 mouse, which is $60, and then there's another one. I can get you a link for the show notes. It's like $150. That's more like an ergonomic kind of more advanced mouse.
I'm assuming they're only supported in specific apps like this VNC app
yeah, exactly.
For them.
So two apps I know of, it's the Jump Desk and it's Citrix's own app. So
right. So
very
just
limited
two
support.
VNC apps. So
yeah.
You know, you're not going to be moving a cursor around on your iPad in notes or anything anytime soon. It's just
Need to use a Mac, it's brilliant because that's the input method that's designed for that OS.
Okay. It's funny you brought up mice, yeah. Because I was going to say that's one thing I do occasionally hear from people, like, oh, if the iPad would just support, you know, a trackpad or a mouse. And I've never really bought that. I like the fact that Apple keeps it separated and says, look, this is a touch device. It's a touch experience. It's this is the way it's designed, and this is the way you're supposed to use it. And to try and force it into being a computer, it's like, well, if you're really in that camp, then, you know, we've got a notebook for you, and you can get a MacBook Air or a MacBook, whatever it might be.
Yeah. The Apple Pencil's been great for just ergonomics and
right.
Having that in my hand. I would love a full desktop iPad, though. That's kind of like your draft table. That just, it's there on your desk. It's this huge thing. You can use touch, and you wouldn't really want a Bluetooth keyboard at that point because you have so much screen space. You wouldn't feel cramped by it.
So the one area that I think needs to be the most addressed by Apple, if they really want to make the iPad a machine that a large number of pros use as their primary system, And we alluded to some of the problems related to this earlier in the show. I think it's really file system and storage in a lot of ways. Like I was going to ask you, you know, like you got the biggest iPad, you know, 500, I think you said 500 gigabytes, right? Is that
it's a 512, which it's been great for
But if you're doing a lot of video only on the iPad, I mean, that's going to run out, and sort of the I/O, the hardware I/O and storage for the iPad, I think is severely lacking. So it, not just the file system, but being able to shuttle files around and also shuttle files on and off of the iPad, I think is where the big problem is. I mean, the promise of the cloud is great, but we don't always have connectivity and we don't always have kind of great connectivity. So I'm curious to hear your take on, I mean, are you kind of in agreement with that, or has that been
a valid
for you?
Point.
Or is that, has that really not been a problem between cloud services and stuff like that? Are you able to kind of do everything? And what are you hearing from the people that you're interviewing for your podcast and stuff like that?
Yeah, so with the 512 gigabyte, it hasn't been a problem so far. I've been storing these huge, you know, 400, 500 megabyte WAV files on there. I've been doing, you know, 8, 10 gigabyte video exports. Mm-hmm. And I now pay for the 2 terabyte iCloud plan.
Right.
Because all these apps, Luma, Fusion, Ferrite, support this archive feature, which will grab all of the files you need to recreate this, and you can export that archive to your iCloud drive, 2 terabytes worth at the current time, and there you've got your backup, which doesn't need to be stored on your device. And something that... So I used to... I have a Duraboo Pro sitting in storage somewhere, but I used to be the Blu-ray ripper and do all that. I've since migrated to, I've got like 800 movies in my iTunes account now that I just bought, I've bought over the years. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also a shift we're probably seeing of people. We don't have CD drives as much in our Macs. I think one of the storage limitations a lot of people, at least consumers, were having problems with is just accessing your media. And I think as people grow up and more people grow up in this way, people will be buying stuff digitally where that part won't be as much of an issue because you'll be streaming it from iTunes or whatnot.
Right.
And as far as inputting video onto the iPad, there's the camera connection. It does one thing really well. You're able to offload, you know, video directly onto your iPad.
Right.
The question, though, is if you're shooting these really long 4K like feature films, what's those are huge, huge files. And that definitely would be an issue, right? Because those are huge files that you're working with.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise you'd have to be working on parts and shuttling things back and forth. But I mean, shuttling files off of large files off of the iPad is, like, other than going again through cloud services, is all but impossible. I guess they've got some of these storage drives, right? The Wi-Fi drives and things like that. And maybe your little, I'm assuming the thing that you mentioned earlier that can connect to an external hard drive or
so that one,
remind me the name of that
thing. It's a Mobilite Wireless G3. But
it needs a better name.
It does. That device is only one way. You're not getting files back onto an SD card.
So the software won't let you write back to the drive?
No, not right now, at least. There's some thumb drives that are Lightning based that do two way, I believe, that are pretty well designed. I haven't bought into those yet because I'd rather, I don't have a need for it yet. But there are some. There are some storage mechanisms out there.
Hyperdrive has some products, right? Or had some for a while. And I know I have a little USB thing from like Memorex. I can't remember the name of it now.
But with Final Cut Pro, if you're trying to work with terabytes of video files attached externally, that's not going to happen.
It was more for shuttling things back off. But I mean, even there, it sets up a really, like you mentioned earlier, a really slow wireless, you know, peer-to-peer connection. So it takes forever to move stuff back and forth, especially if you have large files. So I just kind of see that as an area that I keep hoping that Apple will allow, you know, external hard drives at some point to just be connected. I don't know. And maybe now that they have the Files app, maybe that's in the future. I don't know.
I'm hopeful because the Files app's great. I'd love if you could attach external storage and move stuff directly to a hard drive from there. And
it would solve a lot of problems for a lot of people. But, Apple may not be thinking that way. They may be thinking, look, cloud is the way to go. It's the future. And a lot of times they don't look back. So
Yeah, and the cloud's been great for what I'm using. I think most people, will be able to use an iPad within the next couple of years as their main computer if they want to be. It's going to be some niches that don't do that.
Always. I think that's always the case, you know, with any new technology. I mean, look, most people I know now use notebooks if they use a computer. Not everybody, right? There's a good percentage that are desktop people, but I think I see more people using notebooks than desktops. And, you know, 10 years ago, that wasn't the case. It was more people on probably desktops than notebooks. So, you know, it always transitions, and there's always going to be a certain percentage where, you know, the desktop's going to be the only tool that they want to use and the only tool that they can use. It's the whole, you know, it's the whole cars and trucks
and
thing
Steve famously
threw out there.
Yeah. The iTunes file sharing, of course, is the way to do, massive.
Quasi.
So, yeah, before I got the mobile, that's what I do. I'd hook it up to iTunes and drag and drop the files directly into there. So if you have, like, a one Mac hub for the office that you just hook into and you need to move big files around,
that'd be the way to do it. I always forget that's there. And the other thing about it, though, too, is the app needs to support it. And some apps actually don't. So it also is
I imagine most of the pro apps would at this point.
I can't remember. I think Ferrite does and...
It definitely does, yeah, and Luma does as well.
So,
the drag and drop implementation—it's kind of mind-boggling how well that works, even with all these apps that don't really support it yet. It's been wonderful, just being able to, you know, highlight a URL bar and drag it into workflow as it's asking for URL or upload different files that way.
Well, very cool. Tim, I appreciate you coming on and talking to us about all this and sharing your workflow, because I was really curious what kinds of things you were doing. So I'm glad to have that insight. Like I said, we'll try and have links to, I know we talked about a lot of products and a lot of stuff. Hopefully we'll get them all in there at the show notes at maccast.com. But you want to let people know real quickly about your new podcast and maybe some of the things that you're covering there, and then we'll kind of wrap it up.
Yeah, so you can find it at iPadPros.net, and there's currently 3 episodes up now. First episode's all about my podcasting workflow, which you heard today, and then the second one kind of dives deeper into editorial and my workflow there. The third one is an interview I do with Terry at LumaFusion, a good 30 minutes all about LumaFusion and kind of the features they're working on. And the fourth episode is coming up a week from Thursday. I'm sure when the show is going to release, but pretty soon here, is an interview with Chris at Personos. They make Notion for iOS. It's pretty much the only game in town for music notation, a Finale Sibelius replacement for your iPad, and we dive into their app for episode 4. So the show is going to have a lot of different developer interviews. I'm also trying to find different users and people using the iPad in different situations and just talking about different workflows, different products and things to help people get work done on their iPad. Comes out every 2 weeks on Thursday. And then I also want to just quickly mention the iPod got discontinued recently. I'm pretty bummed about it.
most of them. We still got the iPod Touch. It's not totally gone yet.
The
Shuffle and the Nano are no more. And that's right. I remember you were a huge iPod fan.
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, I had this idea in my head, let me buy every iPod ever made, so scour eBay, and so I own every iPod ever made, and I did a big research project, a research book on that, where I kind of go over the evolution of the iPod, hardware, software. I'm doing deep studies as I'm looking at all the devices, and I did a book called iPod Evolution. It's in the iBook store. So if you're really into the iPod, and sad it's gone as well, I've got a book all about the iPod called iPod Evolution, and I dig really deep into really kind of geeky stuff about the iPod. Some design elements, like, so the original Nano had this clear plastic layer over the white, as did the original iPod. So that there's, like, I found, like, weird, like, design things that you might not notice just from the start. So that it's kind of a cool book for that.
Very cool. So people should check that out on the iBook store too if you're feeling iPod nostalgic. I will say when that happened and I was doing the prep for my show, I grabbed my old iPods and I have like I don't have my original. I had the original 5 gigabyte one.
I love the physical wheel on that. So
but it died, yeah. And I sold it for parts to somebody.
Yeah. So I'm really sad about the shuffle. I was, even last year, I would use, with my girlfriend, I'd as a present, I would package up onto a shuffle music we've shared with each other over the past year as this physical kind of capsule of that year in music. And now you can't do that really. So,
well,
you know,
you can stock up, right? You should be able to get
stock
a bunch
up,
of
iPods on
clearance. And I'm bringing this up because I said it half jokingly on the show. And I said, at least until iTunes doesn't support, you know, the iPod anymore. But here's the thing. It's funny. So I got these old iPods and I'm like, hey, I wonder if they would still
it still
work.
Works out of the original iPod.
It does. At first it didn't work and I thought it didn't. And I didn't cover it in the show because I plugged it in. I was having trouble. And all of a sudden I had left it plugged in. I was sitting here and I guess it finally the battery charged up enough to, you know, because they hadn't been used for years. So the batteries were just super low and stuff like that. It finally charged up enough. So it's the iPod Color, I think. Is that the one? For like a 40 gigabyte. I can't remember which model.
If you have
like
a FireWire, if you wait to plug in FireWire to a Mac, that still works. The original iPod from 2001.
Yeah, and it mounted up and it showed up with the icon in iTunes and I loaded all my current music, you know, less the stuff from Apple Music because it, you know, doesn't have the right DRM.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
All of the stuff that I've personally repped, I updated my iPod from, you know, 2004. So
yeah, it's amazing. Especially the original iPod. That's still the support's still there. So if you have them, I don't think Apple's going to rip it out anytime soon.
Yeah, that's the thing. So if you are really nostalgic if you want Nanos or you want Shuffles, buy them now. Put them in cold storage.
Because I am sad because the Touch. I like a dedicated music device because I can just sit there and be distraction free and not get text messages and just sit down and you go around the interface and just relaxing to music, and that doesn't exist with Apple devices anymore.
In an era. Well, it had a 20 year run, 30 year
I
run.
Guess, yeah. I guess, yeah, 2001,
years.
So what, 16 years? Yeah. But I guess the HomePod is, you know, their new relaxing to music device, you know.
Yep, good 20 year run for the, basically almost 20 year run for the iPod.
Yeah.
So that's not bad for a piece of technology.
Not at all.
On that melancholy note, Tim, thank you so much for coming on the MacCast. It was good to catch up with you, and hopefully we won't go so long next time before we get you back on here. And good luck with the new podcast.
Oh, thanks. It's been fun. I love geeking out about all things iPad and podcasting as well.
All right. Take care. So there you go, Tim Chatton. If you're not familiar with him, go check out the iPad Pros podcast. I think that was one I'm definitely going to add into my feed because I'm very interested in trying to do more with my iPad Pro. I tried the whole podcast recording thing. I actually did an episode. If you go back and listen to one I did last summer when I was on vacation, it worked out all right. I used Ferrite and a lot of the techniques, as you heard in that episode, and it was okay. I think things are getting better, though. So I'm going to have to play around a little bit more, and I'd love to hear any of your stories. If you are more and more using your iPad for, you know, pro production style work, share your stories. Shoot me an email, an audio comment, and we'll talk about this a little bit more on the podcast. So look forward to hearing from you on that. But that is going to do it, I think, for today. So before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label, also Text Expander for iOS, along with PDF Pen for iPhone and iPad. You can get more information and details on all of their great applications by going to smilesoftware.com/MacCast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media, and they are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, your comments, your questions are welcome. Send along your iPad Pro stories and tips and tricks. I look forward to receiving those. You can send those to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number, 281 622 4269-281-MAC-IM-9. And if you need show notes, especially for this episode, lots of great stuff in this one. If you need show notes and links to all of those great things, you can find those on the Mac website, or MacCast website, rather, at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. Or if you're on Google+, google.com/plusMacCast. That'll do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.